SF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded April 5th and 7th, 2026. Well, today is 9/11. That is the 911th day of Israel's genocide in Palestine, 33rd day of its renewed attempt to annex southern Lebanon, and 36th day of America and Israel's attempt to destroy Iran. Employing the same methods, materials, and mindset used to flatten Gaza, what you are seeing culminating in Iran is, my first guest insists, the most consequential war of our lifetime. Dimitri Lascaris is a journalist, activist, lawyer, broadcaster, and co-founder of Canada's Disruption Network. His online show, Reason to Resist, is available on Rumble, YouTube, and at Substack, along with his many articles focusing on Western government criminality. Dimitri's spent the last couple of years surveying and reporting on the destruction by the U.S. and its vassals of West Asia. Dimitri's just out of Iran, where he spent 11 days visiting the places where Western bombs and missiles land with deadly effect. Dimitri Lascaris in the first half. And the wise old man of American aphorisms, Ben Franklin, reputedly said, "In this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes." Though were he alive today, he may have amended that surety to death and the next stupid thing to escape Donald Trump's mouth. But even Ben would be unprepared for that bazoo's astounding prolificacy. It would all be comic were the American president and the state he's brought the world to were not so profoundly unfunny. John Helmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has, as well as serving as advisor to governments at the highest level, too, been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. Among John's many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, Sovcom Plot, How Pirates Tried to Capture the Treasure of the Russian Seas and Were Caught Out, and his latest, the newly released The Coroner is Guilty, a chronicle of the two-year forensic investigations to uncover the cause and role of the treating doctors in the death of his wife, Tatiana Turetsina. His latest article at Dances with Bears is The UN Security Council is Trapped Up the Hormuz Without a Paddle. John Helmer on the truth and lies of life and death, large and larger in the second half. But first, Dimitri Lascaris and real news from Iran. Welcome back to the program, Dimitri.
Always good talking to you, Chris. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure, of course. Now, Dimitri, while you were in Iran surveying the wreckage wrought by Canada's allies and the weapons recipients, Global Affairs Canada announced new sanctions against Iran for its, quote, transfer of arms, drones, and other military technology to foreign governments such as Russia, that Canada says threaten the sovereignty of other states and violates international norms. Beyond the irony of this, Dimitri, what was your impression of Iranian reaction or the perception of Canada's role in this latest Western attempt to destroy their country?
Well, no one really gives a damn about Canada at this particular moment in Iran's history. I say no one, I'm talking about no one in Iran, of course. That was certainly my impression. I think Canada ceased to have credibility with the Iranian people long ago. And, you know, the Iranian people and their government are dealing with the threat of extermination, frankly. And the perpetrators are primarily the United States and Israel of this crime. So they're very much focused on that. I can assure our listeners, Chris, that any sanctions that Canada imposes, particularly at this time, are going to have absolutely no effect, zero effect, on the conduct of the Iranian government or the outcome of this war. And if they don't know that in Canada's government, then they're just complete and utter fools. And if they do know that, then this is purely performative. And they're doing it simply to deceive people into thinking that somehow they're responsible actors on the world stage. As I'm sure you understand, Chris, and many of our viewers will understand, but I'm going to say it anyways, just in case there are some people listening to this conversation who haven't yet understood this. The Canadian government's decision to impose sanctions on Iran, while imposing none whatsoever on Israel or the United States for launching what is the gravest of crimes under international law, a war of aggression against Iran, for the second time, I might add, is absurd. It's nothing more than ironclad proof that Mark Carney's speech at Davos, where he purported to recognize that the world rules-based order was a fraud and proclaimed his intention to embark upon a new guiding principle for foreign policy, that it was all just a pack of lies. It's clear now.
Yeah, I didn't receive that speech the way many others did. It seemed to me that he was just saying, he was rendering unto Caesar what is Caesar's. That was the only thing I took away from that speech. Others overlaid it, it seems, with their hopes and dreams. But knowing who Mark Carney is, or as you refer to him, Prime Minister Goldman Sachs, I don't know how anybody could expect anything other from him.
Agreed.
Well, more seriously than Canada's political posturing, you were in Bushehr. You were reporting in late March on the 27th of the damage to infrastructure there, the bombing damage. Since then, the nuclear plant there has been hit multiple times. The Russians report that their technicians, for the most part, have been evacuated. Others around the city, I think, are being evacuated too. Are you following this?
I'm aware that they have been striking the plant. It's not clear to me whether they are striking the portions of the facility that are most sensitive, and whether they're striking infrastructure around the reactor. I don't know. I'm not sure any of us knows. But this is a crime against international law. For obvious reasons, nuclear facilities have specially protected status in international law. Again, for those who don't know why, I think it should be evident to everybody. You bomb these facilities, you are taking a risk of creating an ecological catastrophe that will have long-term catastrophic health impacts on people living not only in the immediate vicinity of the plant, but potentially hundreds or even thousands of kilometers away. So this is outrageous what Israel is doing. And what is even more insane about this, Chris, is that Iran has the capacity to destroy Israel's Dimona nuclear reactor. And they've already sustained repeated criminal attacks on their nuclear installations in Iran, going all the way back to the June war of last year. At some point, the Iranians are going to, I think, say, we've had enough. They sent a warning shot, as you may know, by striking an area adjacent to Dimona, the nuclear reactor in Israel, quite devastatingly. The Americans and the Israelis don't seem to have gotten the memo. They're playing with fire. One thing I will say, we never saw the Bushehr nuclear reactor. I'm sure that we never asked to see it. We didn't anticipate that the government would allow anybody to see such a sensitive site. And it's also a very dangerous place to be right now. But when we went from Bushehr to Bandar Abbas on the Strait of Hormuz, the hotel we were in, and by the way, almost all the hotels we stayed in were almost entirely empty. The tourism business has been completely destroyed in Iran since this war began. So there were, however, about 20 to 25 men there with us the entire time we were in that hotel. And I would say about a third of them were Russian, and the rest of them were from the Indian subcontinent. And they gave us a song and dance about how they had been on a ship in the Strait of Hormuz, and that it had been bombed. And we asked them who bombed it. They said, we don't know. And then we asked them if they were willing to do interviews, and they refused. Well, I found out later from a reliable source in Iran that they actually came from the Bushehr nuclear power plant, and that they had been forbidden to speak about their activities. And it was weird because they were kind of in limbo. It seemed like they wanted to go home, but they didn't seem to have any idea when and if they were going to go home. Any one of them actually could get out of the country. I got out of the country, just go to the Turkish border by land. So there were some, they were in some kind of a limbo, and they had been instructed, obviously, to, give this story to people who asked who they were, and not to indicate that they were from the power plant. So I personally met people based on the information I have from a colleague in Iran who had been evacuated from the Bushehr nuclear power plant.
Well, we have seen on the Russian front that the allied powers, the Axis, are willing to strike nuclear facilities. We've seen the Ukrainians do it repeatedly in Zaporizhzhia there. And one of the things that is most pertinent is that the cooling systems of these plants aren't run by the plants themselves, but they are fed from outside the power grid. Donald Trump, and you put this up on your Twitter feed, there's a very odd post that of his, and I'll quote some of it. And I can't say that I really believe this is from him. It might be, maybe it's his feed, but it says Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, all wrapped up in one in Iran. There'll be nothing like it. Open the fucking strait, you crazy bastards, or you'll all be living in hell. If he's true to his word, if this is an actually legitimate tweet, and those power plants service the cooling systems for these nuclear plants too, so I mean, this seems especially dangerous.
Well, yeah. What can one say about this president, Chris? I mean, it is amazing. It's amazing that a person who speaks and behaves this way occupies the position of the presidency. It became obvious to me. I'm not a psychiatric expert, but to put it colloquially, the man is completely bonkers. He's cuckoo. He's a whack job. He is mentally unstable. Quite apart from that, he is a buffoon. He is a person who is devoid of any conscience, and he is utterly ignorant about the non-Western world, and not particularly knowledgeable about the Western world either. I can't think of a single respect in which this man is qualified to be the manager of the 7-Eleven, let alone the president of the United States. But here we are. And I think it's entirely possible that no one is going to be able to constrain him within the U.S. government. He's partly because he's surrounded himself with the most abject sycophants imaginable, from blowing up the entire energy infrastructure of West Asia, because that's where this is heading. If he does what he's threatening to do on Tuesday, the Iranians are going to retaliate. They've clearly demonstrated their determination and ability to go up the escalation ladder with the United States. What more evidence does the man need that there is going to be a response in kind to any attempt to destroy Iran's power system? And I should add, it's going to be a lot easier. I guarantee you, based on what I've seen in the region, it will be much easier for Iran to destroy the power, the energy infrastructure of that little pipsqueak of a country, Israel, and the autocracies of the Arab region, than it will be for the United States and Israel to destroy Iran's energy grid. Iran is a country that is as big as Western Europe. Its energy facilities are broadly dispersed. It has various types of energy. And it has, as we've seen over the last 48 hours, pretty effective air defense systems, and they're having to travel long distances to bomb Iran. And finally, their weapon stocks on the American-Israeli side are heavily depleted. So if he wants to get into a full-scale energy war with Iran, I don't think that's going to end well for the United States and its proxies in the region.
Well, and the bridges too. It's obvious, and this has already begun. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Dmitry Lascaris. Dmitry's a journalist, activist, lawyer, broadcaster, and co-founder of Canada's Disruption Network. His online show, Reason to Resist, is available on Rumble, YouTube, and at Substack, along with his many articles focusing on, quote, Western government criminality. Dmitry's has spent the last couple of years in and around Western Asia surveying the wreckage of American foreign policy, along with its vassals like Canada and France. Dmitry just came out of Iran. We're talking a little bit about that today. Dmitry, you're in Crete today, and you put up a post about visiting an American base there, the biggest base, as you report, in the Eastern Med. And there you find at anchor the French carrier Charles de Gaulle. I'm a little confused. I thought Macron, the President Macron of France, was saying, no, I don't want any part of this. France isn't going to take part in this war. We want a friendly solution. We want diplomacy to open the straits and so on and so forth. And yet they are posturing with their military. How do we reconcile these two things?
It's easy. Emmanuel Macron is a double-dealing snake.
Of course.
He proved it. he proved that with the Russians, you know. So why anybody, you could almost, you know, assume the best way to predict his behavior is assume he's going to do the opposite of what he says he's going to do. You know how I found out about that aircraft carrier, Chris? I was in a taverna in the center of Chania, which is about, I'd say, 8 kilometers from the naval base. And I was waiting in a line to go to the loo, and there were 3 guys standing there speaking French. And I'd seen a lot of people speaking French that night. It was surprising how many. And they were all young, muscular males. And so I said to them, there also happens to be an under-19 European Championship football tournament going on here. So the first thing I said, are you guys playing? Are you playing on the football team? No. I said, you here for the military base? And they got very cagey, and they said, well, yes, we're here. And I tried to make nice to them, get more information out of them. They refused to say anything, and they did not tell me that the Charles de Gaulle was at the port. So I went back to my table, and I did a quick search of the local media, and I found a local media report. I didn't see anything in the, you know, the international press that said the Charles de Gaulle had docked at Suda Bay. So then I drove the next morning out there. I can't get on the base, obviously, but you can sit in a tavern on a cliff overlooking from the opposite side of the bay, overlooking the Charles de Gaulle. And from there, I shot footage. It's clear from the local media reports that I saw that its intention is to head into the Eastern Mediterranean, further afield from here and closer to Israel. What is it doing over there? If Macron is looking to de-escalate, he wants to have peace with the Iranian people, why is he sending France's one and only aircraft carrier, which happens, by the way, to be nuclear-powered, into the Eastern Mediterranean at this time? He's a double-dealing snake. I think the Iranians know this, and if he wants to secure any kind of favors from the Iranian government relating to the passage of vessels from the Strait of Hormuz towards France, he's going to have to make some significant concessions.
Well, and that footage is, you can find it at Dimitri's Substack site. Again, that is Reason to Resist. That's Reason Number to Resist, with his other reports there as well. Well, but the press, I mean, he's playing to the press much as Mark Carney in Canada is playing to the press, saying, you know, what he thinks the Canadians want to hear and what the French want to hear in turn. You have some choice words for the CBC, as well as calling them the press generally here, a cabal of prostitutes. You called the Canadian press motherfuckers as well. Are you descending to Donald Trump's level here, or do you think this is a way to get their attention, or what?
Well, I'm not the president of the United States, so I think I take liberties with that.
Thankfully.
But let me assure you, Chris, that if I was ever, you know, the leader of a country, I would not use this language. So if anybody has any doubts about that, you assume that responsibility. There's a certain decorum that you're obliged to observe. Mm. Okay, so, and those of us who are citizen journalists and lawyers who do pro bono work in the spare time, I think that they're perfectly entitled to what so many people do, and to use some crude language now and then when it's called for. And
well, now it's natural language, Dimitri, and yeah. I'm totally on board with that. But you say there's a reason for it, and you say that you've gone there. And you've made yourself available to every press outlet, every reporter, 250 or something, if I remember the number, with press release saying, here I am, you know who I am, I'm in Iran, there's no coverage coming from the ground. And you say this is your opportunity to inform Canadians of what is actually happening on the ground and what the effects of these things are beyond the video game footage that we do get when we get it. And so this is the engine of your outrage.
Yeah, and I didn't actually reach out to them. What happened was Zeev Engler, when on my third day in Iran, sends me an email. He says, listen, I got this list of like 230 or 240 reporters in Canadian media. I don't know, as far as I know, there's nobody in the Canadian media who are on the ground in Iran. So why don't we send them a press release? I'll take care of it for you. Just tell me if you're fine with this press release. And see if they'll bite. So I said, okay, whatever, no harm in trying. And at the very same time, Peter Larson, from you know, who runs the I think it's Let's Talk Israel and Palestine. He's a lifelong civil servant. He's retired now. He's a well-known, well-regarded advocate for the Palestinian cause based in Ottawa. He sends an email and copies me. I had no idea who was going to do it to like six or seven personalities at the CBC, including Rosemary Barton, who has interviewed me before on Power and Politics when she was running that show. Okay, all of the people he emailed, they know who I am. They know who I am. And he said, look, guy on the ground, he's Canadian. You know who he is. Nobody else in Canada is reporting from the ground. Maybe you should speak to him. So I heard absolutely nothing from any of the corporate media outlets in Canada, not the CBC, not the CTV, not Global News, not any post-media newspaper, not the Globe and Mail, not the Toronto Star. I have people following me from all of those media organizations. So they all know I'm in red. They would have known it even if I hadn't, or even hadn't sent this press release. And I heard nothing. Meanwhile, I got contacted by ABC News in the United States, and asked, they asked to use my video for a couple of the reports that I did. And I readily said, as long as you credit me, I don't want to be paid for it, no problem. I got quoted by the New York Times and the Washington Post on an important story our channel did relating to the use of landmines in the Iranian village. They used my video. They credited it to me. I didn't ask for any payment. I did a 1.5-hour interview with one of the largest media outlets in Japan. I have a 1-hour interview scheduled with a large media outlet in India. I've been contacted by multiple media organizations based in West Asia. And my own country, when no one on the ground in Iran comes from Canada, they, knowing full well that I was there, completely ignored me. I don't give a damn about, you know, as I said in my comments about this, Chris, I don't want them to promote me. I don't need their promotion. I don't want their promotion. What I wanted to do was to broaden the reach of the information that we were getting, that we were sharing with people from inside Iran at a time when our country and the world generally are on the cusp of an absolute economic catastrophe resulting from this extremely consequential war. This is important information for Canadians. I wanted help to get that information to them so they would understand what we're getting ourselves into. And apparently nobody in the Canadian media had the slightest interest in sharing that information with them. That's the part that caused me to employ Donald Trump-like language. So,
well, fight fire with fire. These, I want to ask you too, and we're fast running out of time, but these bombies, these landmines, now this is another war crime, goes without saying. But can you describe the nature of this weapon and how you uncovered it? And you were picked up by the New York Times and by the Washington Post. I don't know if the Globe and Mail touched. No, of course not.
If they did, I don't know where. I'm not aware of any Canadian media outlet having picked that story up.
Can you describe what these weapons are and what their effect is designed to be?
Right. So they're, I guess they're, I would suggest, I would, I guess like 12, 10 to 12, they're like circular. They're about 5 inches, 6 inches deep, and they're 10 to 12 inches in diameter. They're green. And so when they land in vegetation, actually, even when they land on concrete, you could be mistaken for thinking it's just some can that's on the road, and you pick it up thinking, I'm going to just toss this in the garbage can, or what is this?
Or like a food can.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And if you have the misfortune of stepping on it or touching it, you're going to be blown to smithereens. So on the night we were in Shiraz, we were there for one night, we received reports that the U.S. military, we didn't know initially whether it was Israel or the United States military, had showered an Iranian village about 30 minutes from Shiraz with these things. And we got permission from the security authorities to go there in the morning. And overnight, the way it came to everybody's attention was a young man, 31 years old, with a 4-year-old child. He came out of his house to smoke a cigarette, and he found one of these things sitting beside his pickup truck. And curiously, he just picked it up curiously. What is this doing on my, you know, driveway? And it blew him to bits. You know, parts of his body were found like 50, 60 meters away. We saw one part of his body, his thumb. And when we went to there, to that village the following morning, it was really just a village. There was nothing else there. There were several that had been found that were still intact. We got close enough to them to photograph them, to videotape them, but we were told to get out of there, to hightail out of there right after we videotaped them, because these things, first of all, it was raining and there was kind of mud and water was flowing on top of them, so people were concerned the pressure would cause them to detonate, but also they can be timed to detonate, so you could be standing there and you know, just at the wrong moment, and the timer goes off and you're dead. So we tried to be quick about it, and then we went into the family allowed us into their home as they were grieving, and that was just, you know, absolutely heartbreaking. And you know, I saw the mother and the sister. They were absolutely distraught. They could barely speak, and the wife wasn't there at the time. We didn't see their daughter. I think the daughter and the wife were in another village, and they were rushing to the village while we were there. So that story, as I say, I put it out, you know, within hours of leaving the village, and there was, you know, intense interest. It wasn't just the, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, and ABC. There were numerous other media organizations that picked it up, to their credit, because what they were effectively reporting was that it was the United States military that launched these things, and that it was potentially guilty of a war crime. So the U.S. media, corporate media, was interested in accusing the U.S. government of committing a war crime, but the Canadian media had zero interest in telling that story. I mean, that's just, I can't even begin to convey how disgusted I am by these people in the corporate media in Canada who call themselves journalists.
Well, motherfuckers covers it pretty good. Dimitri, we're out of time. Thanks a lot for coming on and all the great work that you do, and to bring it to Canadians one way or the other, but you're not going to get it through the CBC, what we pay for. I want everyone to stay tuned. John Helmer will be here after the break. Stay safe there.
Thank you, brother.
All right.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people. This bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
What the threat is there, why this nation needs to be demolished? What about those girls who might have gone to college? Is it worth the price? What we reap? Is this the martyrdom you see? Soldier, do you believe possibly to stop a war bomb preemptively? What has an Iranian done to you when you hear the lies? Do you think they're true? Do you want to end an ancient civilization? Or instead abandon your station, going AWOL? Whatever it takes might be the best decision you ever make. Before you kill or die in an imperial war, soldier, what are you fighting for? Soldier, no, most Americans do not support this slaughter of Iranians, and all over the world they're against this aggression. This is really American war of demolition. If you go AWOL, you will see everywhere you'll find solidarity. If you join your brothers and your sisters too, and the rest of the world, we're just like you. Before you kill or die in an imperial war, soldier, what are you fighting for? Who gave us the right to control the world's affairs, no matter the toll? By bombing hospitals and schools, how could that possibly accomplish anything good? If you need a job or a college degree in this big world, you can get one for free. Meet me for coffee, we can talk about the war event waits for those who walk. Before you kill or die in an imperial war, soldier, what are you fighting for? Fighting for.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, as we record, we're less than an hour away from the American president's threat to annihilate the Persian civilization and all Iranians with it if needs be. The only pertinent question now is Trump crazy or crazy like a fox? The madman doctrine is as old as Kissinger and Nixon, and it was meant to